Everyone should have this sense that they have a pink permission slip in their hands that says, you have permission, finally, to take exceptional care of yourself.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Hi, my hair is everywhere. Hi, welcome to Meditation. Welcome to Motivation to Write. I'm excited because I have Dr. Christine Kiesinger, who's going to talk to us about meditation and self-care and all that good stuff. Before we get to Dr. Kiesinger, let's catch up. My virtual cocktail party for Women Who Write takes place on January 8th at 6 p.m. Pacific time. So if you'd like to participate in that, RSVPs open on December 21st. This is a space limited to 8 women so that we all have a chance to speak, but we are going to be talking about setting intentions for the new year, following through on our goals and self-care, marketing, all the stuff that we talk about on Motivation to Write. So I hope that you can join me. Again, RSVPs take place or open on December 21st and the event takes place on January 8th. And you can visit my website, zazo.com, for more information and to sign up. Now let's learn a little bit more about Dr. Christine Kiesinger. Dr. Christine Kiesinger helps to integrate her deep understanding of conscious communication and mindfulness into the Studio B curriculum. Dr. Kiesinger taught at the university level for 30 years, recently retiring to focus on her personal and professional development coaching practice, corporate communication and mindful leadership trainings, as well as her work as an integrative wellness educator. Whether in the classroom, meditation cushion and yoga mat, or within corporate settings, the foundation of all of Dr. Kiesinger's teaching is mindfulness. Hi, Dr. Christine Kiesinger.
That's right, Kiesinger.
I'm so happy to meet you. Yes, I'm happy that you're here. I was excited to talk to you because I was checking out your website and you write a lot about mindfulness and I think it's really good stuff. You have this great article, 5 Ways to Protect Your Mental Health and Physical Health When Working From Home, which I think these are great tips that myself as not only like a blogger, but a person with a day job can use to help de-stress and relieve anxiety. I was wondering, because you are the VP of Business Development and Leader Trainer at Studio B. So I was hoping you could maybe tell us a little bit about Studio B, and even a little bit about like your journey to mindfulness. Did you always practice this or how did this happen?
Well, I'll start with Studio B. So Studio B is a well-tech company that is fiercely devoted to personal and professional well-being through mindfulness. Mm. And we recently, actually just Monday, launched a beautiful brand new virtual platform that offers both live and pre-recorded classes from teachers from all over the globe that focus in the area of yoga, meditation, and really what I call comprehensive well-being. And I do a lot of the well-being work for Studio B. Mindfulness, especially mindfulness meditation, is very near and dear to my heart. I started meditating a little over 30 years ago. And what brought me to meditation was crippling panic attacks that began right between the end of my undergraduate career as I was coming into my master's degree program, and just found myself on the floor thinking I was having a heart attack, just out of the blue, did not understand what was happening to me. And at that time, so this would have been a little bit over 30 years ago, the medications for anxiety, I don't even know that they prescribe them today because I felt like a zombie. And knew that I had to find an alternative. And very serendipitously, in fact, there is a blog on our site where I write about my first meditation experience. I just pulled a book from a shelf, and inside there was a little pamphlet that someone had given to me years before about meditation. And I read it and I just said, I'm just going to give this a try. And I experienced benefits that first time and I never looked back. With the exception of a couple of days in my life where I was really sick and couldn't meditate, I meditate daily.
Wow.
Yes.
So what did that little pamphlet, did it just take you through the steps to meditation? Or what did it
say? And it was a very simple little tutorial, like what is meditation? And I believe the instructions were just to sit quietly with a focus on the breath. And I remember I was outside. It was kind of a very mild day. I could feel the sun beating on my face or the warmth of the sun on my face. And I felt an ease and a serenity that I had never experienced in my life. I also realized after that experience that I likely was born anxious. I don't know that I knew how anxious I had been for my entire life until I had the experience of a very deep, abiding peace.
Wow. You know, I think a lot of people can relate to the anxiety. I mean, I know I can. I never thought of the notion that I could have been born anxious, though. But I feel like there's always just from childhood, there's so much, I'll just speak for myself, there's so much pressure on myself to be a certain person for people. Like, this is who I need to be for my parents. This is who I need to be as a student. This is who I need to be as a teacher. And sometimes that pressure can become overwhelming, probably because in some way I am like suppressing who I really want to be or really wanted to be.
Which is incredibly stressful.
Yeah.
The suppression of sort of my natural inclinations, this is who I want to be versus this is who I should be, is so stressful.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons why trying to come into alignment with who you are, like really who you are, and your core principles and values, once you do that, the alleviation of stress is unbelievable. Another thing you can think about, because I did this when I had this hunch that maybe I was born anxious, I asked my mom, I said, Mom, what were the circumstances around your pregnancy? And she had, until I asked her this question, I didn't know this, but shortly before she became pregnant with me, she miscarried and it was terrifying for her. And when she learned that she was pregnant again, she was really anxious. And I'm like, I marinated in anxiety hormones, right?
Yeah.
We now know that this is true, that the quality and the hormonal nature of the embryonic fluid that you're growing in is impacted by the level of cortisol and adrenaline in the body, which are the stress hormones.
Right. You know, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I first heard the notion, and it's that exact same word you use, marinate, of like marinating in your mother's energy while you're in the womb. I was some talk show years ago on television, and it just made me think, I like being pregnant, if you're under a lot of stress, surely the child within you is feeling that same stress. So that is, I mean, it's kind of scary, but it's also fascinating.
It is. It's one of the reasons why our prenatal care related to really being serious about managing stress well is so important. It really gets into your hard wiring, you know, this the stress response as being your default, you know, becomes so firmly entrenched in your own neurology that, you know, you become that person who upon waking each morning isn't waking to the day feeling like, oh, you know, I wonder what today is going to bring, and really relax, but rather, you know, this sort of jarring of what's happening today? What's going to happen? You know, fear.
Right. Yeah.
And we're not alone. I mean, so many people wake up in the morning that way. I often ask people as a mindfulness exercise, for the next week, at the very moment that you awaken, check in with where your thoughts are. When I do this in a corporate setting, I can't tell you how many times individuals will raise their hand and say, my first thought upon waking is, oh shit. And then you immediately go into, and then you're launching into your day with, oh shit.
Right.
Of yeah. Everything that you know you have to do or what may or may not happen. And there you are.
Yeah.
Stress response. First thing that's activated in your body in the morning.
I'm laughing because I once had a student say to me, this is maybe 10 years ago. She said, I think you're the type of person that wakes up and says, oh, bleep. And I thought, oh my goodness, what is it about the way I'm presenting myself in the classroom where they can see that? Because she was kind of right. but I like how you bring up, because on your website, I see that you do work with people in the workplace to kind of make the workplace a mindful environment. Mm-hmm. And I love that idea. And I wish that more workplaces would embrace it, because I think a lot of people feel that their bosses or their supervisors or whatever, their companies don't even care about their well-being.
Well, you know, you've just said something that's really important. So 7-8 months ago now, COVID hit, and corporate life, organizational life was just turned upside down, especially with so many people having to work remotely. And we're still very much adapting to this new way of working, new way of leading, new way of getting things done, new way of goal setting, all of this stuff. But as corporations continue to think about, like, what makes for a good, healthy corporate culture, this notion of creating what we call a culture of care is so essential right now. I mean, really, to continue to retain employees, to motivate employees, to work at an optimal level in a situation where there's so much uncertainty. You know, one of the primary ways that we will continue to retain our workforce and get them to work at the highest levels possible is by creating a culture where they actually feel cared for. Where they actually feel cared for at all levels of their being, not just who they are as working professionals. So this crisis has caused so much pain and suffering and stress and overwhelm for people, and has just exploded opportunities and possibilities and potential for us to work differently, smarter, healthier. You, as a corporation, you have to care for the mental and emotional health of your teams and your staff and employees right now, or you're remiss.
Well, yeah. And also, when you don't care about your employees, it just backfires and makes things worse. Like I'm kind of in that position now as a teacher, where the teachers are very upset that they're back on campus. The kids are not back on campus, but the teachers are.
Yeah.
And it feels like, you know, no one's really listening to us and our concerns and our safety and our things clean. And it's just like snowballing into this, I can't even explain it. It's just this atmosphere of stress all the time and anger, and you're hypersensitive and, you know, it's just not a good thing.
Yeah. And what you're describing again is not at all unusual right now. We don't have a roadmap for this. We don't have a manual for this. We're making it up as we go along. But the biggest, most important piece of advice that I could give to any leader of an organization is to put employee well-being in the forefront of your mind and let everything else follow from that. And sometimes that means that as a leader, I actually take a moment at the beginning of a video conference call and I say, hey, let's all just check in with each other. How's everybody doing? You know, give me two or three words about how this is all feeling for you. That's it, right? But that can make such a big difference. So there's just these tiny little things we can do to communicate, hey, I know that this is hard for everybody. This is not business as usual.
Yeah, it's not.
Not in any way.
When you try to act like it is, that just makes it worse also. I want to talk about, so since we're into how to use mindfulness in the workplace and even at home to kind of de-stress, I want to talk about these 5 points that you bring up in your article. And the first one, you said that it's important to take breaks.
Yeah, right. So many people are working at home right now. And what we're learning is that because we're working at home, we're actually working longer and harder because it's easier. We are not turning the computer down and leaving the building.
Right.
It's right here. We're also booking ourselves in a way that we're not allowing for breaks. Sometimes a break in an office space means I get up out of my chair and I walk to the conference room.
Right.
The conference room is right here. And so one of the things that I've been doing when I have back-to-back calls, I will just try to take, and this is such a simple practice, take 30 seconds and do 3 long, deep breaths with this tip. Make your exhalation longer. So you take a deep breath in, but as you exhale, make the exhale longer. When you exhale longer, you settle the system down. It's like reaching into the part of your brain that's on high alarm and saying, okay, you can just kind of pipe down now. Everything's fine. It has that kind of impact on us neurologically. So just that can make such a big difference, because then I know I can go into the next meeting free from the last meeting, not thinking about the next meeting, and just really present and focused. So taking breaks, making sure that, for example, something as easy as making sure you're eating lunch, you know, and not eating like protein bars all day long, or not, you know, forgetting to eat at all. I mean, just because work is happening in a different location. Self-care right now, self-care has always been important. Mm-hmm. It's never been more important than it is right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I think it's unfortunately self-care is overlooked because of everything that's happening. We're worried about just maintaining our health, or if we're with someone who is sick, worried about their health and money, if you know whatever, if your job is in and out or whatever, and maybe this will lead to, when I say this pandemic will lead to a new self-care boom after it's over. I don't know, but it's definitely something that we need to pay more attention to. And
at a really practical level, right? I do not want to be vulnerable to COVID, which is a highly contractable virus.
Right.
So the degree to which I can strengthen my immunity is really going to help me. I mean, we all want to have strong immune systems, as strong as possible. Number one in really being resilient in terms of your immunity is having a low stress level. So I agree with you. Everyone should have this sense that they have a pink permission slip in their hands that says you have permission finally to take exceptional care of yourself. You don't have to earn it. It's here. Now is the time. So if you ever wanted to make changes related to your own care, take it on.
why do we tend to, and I know we kind of talked about some of the reasons why we, especially during this time, why we tend to ignore our own self-care, but even pre-COVID, I feel like a lot of people feel it's just selfish to practice self-care. I'm a mother. I have 5 kids. I don't have time to practice self-care, or I'm single. I have to support myself. I'm working 40 plus hours a week. What, you know, it's just, it seems like some lofty.
So nothing in my life goes well if I'm not taking care of myself. I might get by, but nothing is optimal. And at Studio B, we have a model where the key components of a human life are your physical well-being, your cognitive well-being, like how well is my brain actually functioning, mm-hmm. emotional well-being, relational well-being, like are my relationships healthy, and then our professional well-being. So if things are bad in my relationships, it's going to affect my health, my ability to think, my feelings, my professional life. And in any one of these areas, if you're not taking care of yourself, because they're all interdependently linked. Mm. Sadly, when many of us think about self-care, we often are thinking about it in the realm of the physical. Mm. Like, I need to drink more water. I need to
get a massage.
Get a massage, right? And all of those things are good, but okay, well, how are you self-caring for your cognitive functioning, mm-hmm. so that your brain is sharp and clear? And, you know, if there are people watching this who are writers or bloggers, mm-hmm. right? This notion of caring for yourself cognitively is so important, because what we know about the brain and stress is when the brain is marinating in the stress hormone,
right?
There are lots of different parts of the brain that I don't have access to when that's happening. And one part of the brain that I don't have access to when I'm in a high level of stress and not taking care of myself is the creative part of my brain. It's like the door is closed to that part of my brain, so that when you have writer's block, mm-hmm. or you're feeling like I'm on the precipice of getting this out, but it's just not coming.
Right.
I always will tell writers, all right, question number one, what's your stress level like? Because you're either percolating the idea, because sometimes it needs to percolate, right? Or you are so stressed, you don't have access to what you need to make this happen. This is one of the reasons why, and you're a writer, so this has probably happened to you. Probably some of your best ideas have happened to you in the shower.
Yes, that would always happen to me. Oh my gosh.
You know why? Because at least when we're in the shower, most of us, we're calming it down a little bit. We've got the warm water. We are actually, no one can get to us when we're in the shower. We're pretty isolated. It's like a break of sorts. So people will report, I got this great idea while I was driving. You know, I got this great idea while I was in the shower. I got these great ideas. I used to get my best writing ideas on long walks or on vacation. This is why. When you ask people who have innovated at a really high level, which is an act of creativity, mm-hmm. I remember reading a story about the person who created the Dyson vacuum. Mm. And there were many, many versions of the Dyson vacuum before he got it right where he wanted it. But the idea that he needed to get it, to make a Dyson occurred while he was on vacation swimming in the ocean.
Wow.
So this, getting to this creative part of our brain through stress reduction is critical.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm working with a client who has writer's block at times, and she's under a lot of stress. So of course it's very difficult to create. And she also, I'm wondering if you can maybe talk a little bit about this, because I know one of the buzzwords in personal development is underlying beliefs, mm-hmm. and what, because we kind of got to the core of one of her underlying beliefs that was kind of keeping her from even writing. Like, how important are your beliefs when it comes to managing stress?
Well, this going to this place with her, if you were sort of coaching or mentoring her, is a really critical part of the process, because writers can be super critical, judgmental.
Yeah.
You know, Liz Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love, mm-hmm. you know, Elizabeth Gilbert talks about being her own harshest critic, you know, right. that after she wrote the book and then the movie was made, she went into paralysis response. She was frozen, thinking, I'll never write a word again, mm-hmm. a good phrase or a good sentence again. The underlying beliefs that sabotage us are usually related to the voices in our head that are really negative. Like, who do you think you are to be a writer? You're not creative. No one will read this. I could go on and on. But ultimately, they usually always come back to the same thing, which is, I don't deserve, you know, the success that comes with being a good writer, that I'm somehow not worthy. It's usually around something like that, which by the way, most of us feel at some level. Mm-hmm. But here's where mindfulness comes in. When you start to become aware of these thoughts, they're just thoughts.
Right.
They're usually not linked to anything that's real or even any real evidence. Mm-hmm. When you start to really like look at the way that you're thinking about things, you start to realize, wow, you know, who's running my life? Am I running my life or are my thoughts running my life?
Exactly, yeah.
And, you know, I want it to be the other way around. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what the mind does. The mind thinks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But let's get a little more self-aware and mindful. Mm-hmm. Meditation will get you up close and personal with how you think.
But you know, so Christine, a lot of people are just so hesitant, apprehensive to meditate, because it's almost as though they feel it's going to cause them more stress, because when they sit down to meditate, they have an idea of what meditation is and that it should be this totally calm, you don't have anything going on in your head kind of thing. And then the minute that they do have something pop up in their head, they feel like they failed at meditation and they're just ready to get up and blow the whole thing off. So what do you say to people who go through that?
This happens all the time. You know, people will tell me, you know, they know that I practice and teach meditation. Oh, I can't meditate because I can't stop my mind. That's not the goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the goal of meditation is not to stop your mind.
Right.
You know, mindfulness meditation, especially, you know, really mindfulness meditation is about, can I be with what is, just as it is, without trying to make it different, control it, manipulate it, resist it, dramatize it, diminish it? Can I just be with what is? So if I am in a pool of grief or loss, can I be with that without trying to push it away, without running away and screaming because it hurts so much? Can I just be with it, even if it's for 30 seconds, even if it's for 3 minutes? There's this idea that you have to meditate for an hour, you have to be on a cushion somewhere with incense. It's all BS. Mm-hmm. If you have those things, and that's great. Anyone can come into a meditative state very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I was giving a talk yesterday about how mindfulness can be practiced in our close relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave a 3-step process for that. And this has nothing to do with being on a cushion. It has nothing to do with closing your eyes, but has everything to do with having this person in your life that you care about seated in front of you and making and sustaining eye contact. Can you do that? Step number two, can you just relax your shoulders and bring your shoulders back so that this part of your body right here, where anxiety tends to land, softens? Mm-hmm. And can you just feel your feet on the floor? So here's what it conveys. If you're my daughter or my spouse or my intimate other or my colleague that I care about, and I can look at you in the eyes, I'm saying, I'm here. I'm present. If I can relax through the chest and the heart, I'm saying, you know what? This might be a difficult conversation. We might be having a little bit of difficulties, but I'm open. And if I can connect to my own two feet, I realize that no matter how hard things get, I'm staying right here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my feet are a very important grounding resource for me. So you and I can be in a meeting in a difficult negotiation. I can be driving and get bad news. And if I want to quickly ground myself, I go right to my feet. Mm-hmm. I just focus on my feet, and it helps me to kind of call all my energy back right here to this moment, because even if I'm driving and I just got bad news, I know that this now moment is okay. Hmm. I'm okay. And then the next moment comes, and that's all I have to deal with. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm expected to deal with is right now. So one of the big myths of meditation is it takes too long. I've been meditating, as I said, for over 30 years. There are sometimes when I sit and my mind is like a train wreck. It's just right. And I'm just okay, you know. And maybe that day I'm just sitting for 6 minutes or 3 minutes. And maybe that day I'm sitting for 40 minutes. I hold no judgment. Mm. I don't come away and say, that was a great meditation. I had a horrible meditation yesterday. It's like, this is what it is. Mm.
You know, I loved how you said it doesn't even need to be that long. Like you could just sit with your pain for 30 seconds. I mean, I remember when I studied energy healing for a while, and they would teach us, if you're feeling upset, just feel it with all its intensity in your body. And you'll see, like, if you're present with it, you'll see after about 30, 45 seconds, it'll leave your body. Doesn't mean that you won't be thinking about it, but that intensity will diminish. And yeah, that has really helped me. I think a lot of people are just scared to sit in the pain because they think it's just going to be overwhelming and they're just going to die. But if you're really present with it and just can feel it going through your body, it'll pass right through.
Yeah, you're right. And we know now, neurologically speaking, that it takes about 90 seconds for that to pass. So let's say you're grieving, and most people who are grieving, real profound grieving, will have what I call grief waves. Mm. It just comes on. So we know that that wave is going to last about 90 seconds. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes shorter, but you're right. If you can just ride it, if you can just stay with it, yeah, it will pass. Mm-hmm. And it might come, it'll probably come back. But none of these feeling states are permanent. Like I always say, have you ever been perpetually sad? No. Have you ever been forever angry? No. Have you ever been perpetually happy? No. Mm-hmm. Feelings are impermanent, and we know this to be an absolute truth.
Right. Yeah.
Just like everything changes.
Right.
We know, I know I can count on that. Right. We often recommend for beginner meditators 3 minutes. Mm. And if you want to sit for longer, mm-hmm, go ahead. Mm-hmm. But 3 minutes is where we'd start.
Yeah.
you're more likely to stay with it if you begin with that.
Well, I was just reading, I can never think of this author's name, but he wrote the book Atomic Habits. Have you heard that book?
No.
So he says that in trying to build a new habit, do it in like 2 minute sessions. Mm-hmm. So which your 3 minutes just reminded me of that. Yeah, start small with 3 minutes a day or whatever it is, and you'll see that it will become habitual and you can, you know, grow it. But you don't have to start with like an hour meditation.
No. You wouldn't continue on.
Right.
It would be very difficult. Yeah, very, very difficult. And you know, the 3 minutes, what we know too about meditation's capacity to change your neural network is less about quantity of time spent meditating and more about consistency.
Mm.
So if I sit daily for 3 minutes consistently, mm-hmm. that's going to have more of an impact. Mm. I don't want to be thinking about it in terms of I need to have a half an hour or an hour every day in order to have impact. These neurological shifts start to change, or your neurology begins to change with consistency.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And that's how, you know, we know that the brain, neuroplasticity, the brain has a malleability to it. Our brains are not hardened into place. And so we have the capacity to carve new neural pathways that can have a very significant impact on the quality of our life.
Yeah, I remember reading that in like different books watching documentaries would tell us your brain can change. You can actually train yeah. your brain, and that's encouraging. It takes a lot of effort, mm-hmm. I feel like, to change. For example, if I have a tendency to always call myself names or just say abusive things to myself, it takes effort to be aware, catch it, and counter it. You know, like that's a constant practice. And I think some people just get discouraged because it's like, I can't keep doing this, or it's just, you know, it's too much for them to always monitor their mm-hmm. thoughts.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, I will often refer to meditation as the way in which you mind your own mind, right? Mm-hmm. Like I might mind or tend to my body by, you know, resistance training 3 days a week, or brushing my teeth every morning, or making sure that I'm hydrated. These are ways that I tend to my body. Again, going back to sort of, I think, how we got here, which was, how do we cognitively mind or tend to our own minds? You know, we don't talk about taking our mind to the gym.
Right, yeah.
And developing mental musculature. Meditation consistently done helps you to develop that mental musculature so that you are not feeling like you are being yanked around by the whims of your own thoughts,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, that you have some degree of semblance and right. sovereignty. I like the word sovereignty over control, right. that I sort of like, okay, you know, and I can check in with my own mind whenever I want to. Mm-hmm. I can be anywhere and sort of pop in and what's happening up here. How am I talking to myself right now?
Mm-hmm.
What am I saying? Like for your colleague, you know, what am I telling myself right now? What am I believing about myself as a writer right now?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And is it true?
Yes. And questioning it, like, is it true? Yeah. That's been a big help for me, because most of the time it's not true. The thought is not
yeah.
true.
And yeah. you start there. And I think the work of Byron Katie.
Yes.
Yes, right?
Yes. The client I was mentioning earlier, we went through Byron Katie's The Work.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
And I think that The last question is a mind blowing, which is, who would I be?
Yes, without the thought, right?
Without the thought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dr. Kiesinger.
Yes.
We're running out of time, and I could talk about that for, I love talking about that. But I want to get to the other 4 points because they're actually pretty interesting in your post. You mentioned avoid email apnea. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So email apnea was a term that was coined to describe the experience of getting into your work email box, almost going immediately into stress response, and you actually severely limit or actually stop breathing. Just like apnea occurs for people who have sleep apnea, yeah, they stop breathing for periods of time during their sleep. What we've learned is that many people are looking at emails and having the apnea experience, either holding their breath or holding their breath back. When I first learned about email apnea, I started to get really mindful, and I realized I was doing it too. You know, logging into your email at the start of the day is sort of like, what am I going to find here, right? Yeah. And making sure that you are very aware that you're breathing the entire time. I mean, it sounds crazy that we would do this, but we do. We stop breathing. And ever since COVID hit, and so many of us are working remotely and doing a lot of this video conferencing, now we've developed another term called screen apnea.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say Zoom fatigue.
Well, Zoom fatigue is also very real. I could spend an hour on Zoom fatigue, but video conferencing apnea, especially if I'm not the one speaking and I'm listening, am I breathing very, very rhythmically and regularly as I'm? And the reason that it's happening is because even if I'm in a session as a participant, in addition to the work that I'm doing, I'm also doing a different kind of work, which is the work of performing.
Yes.
We're being watched.
Right.
So there's this whole added dimension here that is really stressful. And that's part of the fatigue, by the way.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Because when you're on a Zoom call or in a Zoom classroom for 90 minutes, I mean, it's just, you have to present yourself on camera for 90 minutes, knowing that everyone is looking at you, and they're probably not really, I mean, they're probably worried about people looking at them too, but still, that notion of, I have to look and be a certain way, I can't move, I can't do anything for this 90-minute session, because all these people are looking at me and watching me and judging me. And
Yeah, that's why when we turn our cameras off, it feels like,
yes.
Yeah, it's really draining. So yeah, be very mindful of email and screen apnea.
You know, that's so interesting, because I do notice sometimes, I haven't really noticed with email, but if I'm reading something that I find a bit stressful, even exciting, I hold my breath.
Yes.
I'm holding my breath. Let me just exhale and continue. But and you know what? Also, that remind me of Christine. When I'm driving, sometimes I don't even realize like how tense I'm holding the steering wheel.
Yeah. So a really great mindfulness strategy. Again, this is mindfulness while you're driving. Become mindful of that tension and just relax it. Sometimes what I do if I'm really tightly gripping is I'll just keep one hand on the wheel. If you shake your hands out, this is a way that you can shake out of your system cortisol and adrenaline. Oh. It's like shaking off the stress hormone. So even between Zoom meetings, if you know, you're not on camera, you just sort of shake through the whole body, even the legs and feet, you're really getting rid of a lot of that hormone that's just sort of coursing through the bloodstream.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. The next thing you mentioned is connect mindfully throughout the day. And it seems like these little things you've been mentioning throughout, like taking time to breathe, taking time to just feel whatever it is that you're feeling, that would probably tie into how we would connect mindfully throughout the day.
Yeah, with ourselves and then also with each other. And I, what I'm really recommending there is just little things. Like, for example, I might be having a long work day, and I know that my 10-year-old niece is having a long virtual school day. So maybe I just text her a heart or a thinking of you. Or we have to become very intentional and proactive about connecting with others, because what we need to feel as human beings now more than ever, especially amidst, we're still in many ways in crisis, is a sense of safety and a sense of connection. Psychologically, we need those two things more than anything else. And we're not inherently safe right now. There's a lot of, you know, COVID is a big threat. So how can I make you feel safe in our relationship? That is something that I can control. How can I remind you that we're connected, that you belong, that I love you? So maybe once a week you say, hey, I have a pile of postcards here, beautiful postcards. Once per week, I randomly choose someone from my life. I just write them a message, throw a stamp on it. Do you know how meaningful that is?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like, when was the last time you received personal mail?
Well, my mother sends me a birthday card every year.
That's wonderful, right? But could you imagine if you went to your mailbox and you had just this, a card, or like, these things should not take a lot of time.
Right. Yeah. 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 That does make it, you know, my mother actually sends more than birthday. She sends Christmas cards and Valentine's Day cards. But yeah, it's great to get something with someone's actual handwriting on it, and not just on the envelope, like, you know, a written message in a card or letter or whatever. That's a great idea. You also talk about noticing the mundane.
So this can be, and this really goes back to a really important principle in mindfulness meditation, which is honoring the preciousness of life. And I'll give you a really quick example of this. Around Thanksgiving, last Thanksgiving, my brother and his wife brought their child for the first time to our Thanksgiving dinner, because he was a newborn. But at birth, he had had open heart surgery. So he had a really rough road. But this was his sort of his very, very first public gathering. And my mom was holding him, and everyone was nervous.
Like, yeah.
Just nervous. And I could feel the nervous energy in the room, and I could feel myself nervous. So I decided to practice a focus on the mundane. And I noticed that my nephew and my mother's hands were locked. And I could see his hands and against hers, you know, and her hands are much older and his are brand new. And I was thinking about all the ways my mother has used her hands to serve and to love and to care, and all of the ways that he'll do the same. Why is this important? It was a moment that I put my focus on. This is a form of meditating. On the preciousness of these two hands joined together. Calms me down. It only takes one person in the room to be calm and settled. Because it's contagious.
That's true.
Stress is contagious, and so is calm.
Yeah.
So is there, the mundane might be, this is jasmine tea iced, and I might be having a really hard time right now, but I'm drinking my favorite iced tea. That's where I'm going to put my focus for just a few moments. And it takes me from the turbulence of whatever it was I felt very ensnarled by.
Yeah, I love that image of like your mother's older wrinkled hand with the baby's like tiny hand. That is, I love that because it reminded me of, I recently purchased a juicer, mm-hmm. and those can be just a pain to clean like afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I told myself, I'm going to have to just really become mindful and enjoy the process of cleaning this. Just notice little thing like the bubbles or the feeling of the water.
Yes.
Take my mind out the stress of cleaning it. Right.
Yeah. So that's exactly what I'm talking about. That cleaning the juicer is a mundane task. Mm-hmm. But if you bring mindfulness to it, it becomes precious. Hmm. And so just holding that word precious in your mind as something to start looking for. After you and I finish up this conversation, I'm going to take my dog for a walk. Now, I can take the dog for a walk and not be there. Thinking about what's coming next. Or I think I'm going to take her for a walk and really start to notice as many different colored leaves as I can. Mm. That's what I'm going to choose to do. And then that becomes a mindful walk. Sometimes when I walk with my niece and nephew and their kids, I'll say, we're doing a color walk and the color is red. I want you to start to notice everything that you encounter that's red. And we will walk the same route for a year now. And they'll say, I never noticed. We walk by this house all the time. This person's mailbox is red. I just like, try it. It's very startling. What your whole world looks different when you're just choosing to mindfully focus on one thing.
Right, yeah.
These are very mundane tasks. I mean, think about all the times you've had to take a drive and you reach your destination and you think, I don't even remember getting off the exit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You weren't present.
Or not even getting home. Like, how did I get home? I don't even remember. That happens all the time. Yeah.
But it's an incredible practice, mindfulness practice for stress reduction is, as Dr. Rick Hansen, he's my favorite neuropsychologist, says, at any given moment, even the toughest moment, ask yourself, what in this moment is precious? And maybe it's the scarf that's hanging on the back of a chair across the room from you that your grandmother gave you that's okay. Every moment contains within it something that's precious that you can take your attention to.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Christine, we are out of time. Oh, this was such a great conversation.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
I did too. Now, before we go, can you tell us where we can find you?
Yes, you can find me directly at christine@meetyourcenter.com. You can visit us at Studio B, studiobmindfulness.com. And I want to also invite your listeners to enjoy a free 14-day trial in our gorgeous portal. Just email me at Christine, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, at meetyourcenter.com. You'll find my teacher page there. There's lots of free goodies there. And lots of upcoming courses and trainings and that sort of thing. But really, if any of what I said was intriguing to you, there's so many, it's like a beautiful mindfulness world that you can explore. So I really want you to take advantage of it. Just reach out to me via email.
That's great. Thank you, Dr. Christine Kiesinger.
That's right. Thank you.
That was such a wonderful conversation with Dr. Christine Kiesinger. And I hope that you were reminded or that you learned that you do have permission to take care of yourself. You do have permission to practice self-care because it's vital to practice self-care during this pandemic and this very stressful season. And beyond this pandemic, it's important to practice self-care because it's just necessary for your overall health. So I am, I'm very happy that you listened to this episode, and I hope that you do visit Dr. Christine Kiesinger's website. Also visit Zazzle.com this weekend for my big takeaways from my conversation with Dr. Kiesinger. And this episode dear friends, marks the end of season one. I had a ball with all of my guests, some very fabulous people. It was just, it's amazing. I've learned so much, and I hope you have too. So next weekend, I will have a best of episode where I will share some of my favorite moments from my guests from season one, and I will be back with season two on January 2nd. I have Miss Bridget Dango. I hope I'm saying her last name properly, and please forgive me, Bridget, if I'm not. Bridget Dango as a guest. She's an author and a psychotherapist. We had a wonderful, fun, enlightening, rich conversation that I cannot wait to share with you. So join me on January 2nd for that. And I believe that's all the news right now. I think I'm going to wrap it up. So visit zazo.com to subscribe to my weekly newsletter. And you can also follow me at Motivation to Write on Instagram, and also Facebook at Motivation to Write, and Twitter at Ebony Haywood. Have a wonderful week. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. I don't take your time for granted. I really appreciate it. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.